For November the 8th, 2013, we talk about being on the eve of the next console generation, Batman Arkham Origins, and the state of games journalism. Welcome to the 41st Level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for listening. Episode number 41, you guys. Let's see here. David is not able to join us because of, I guess, school. I don't know, he said.
Lame. What a square.
Simultaneous lames, man. High five. Yeah.
Can we all just snap at the same
just
time?
Just crack a brewski all at once.
Yeah.
Oh man. So I think we had a very fruitful warm up. Some of that might get into the post roll. If you're not listening for the post rolls on these, they're generally pretty funny. So after the credit music, there's some funny little outtake stuff that happens. So now you have 40 episodes to go back and listen to the very end of if you didn't know about those things.
I assume that's like the only good, like, radio-worthy stuff we do. I assume that everyone just skipped to those.
Oh, yeah. No,
do people actually listen to this stuff?
Well, I always put a time code in there for the good things. In general, sometimes we get up to like 3 or 4 like spans, but normally it's just kind of like, okay, this is when the music ends. And I don't even leave any of the actual music in there. Like, just, I get them past it, you know, just so that so they're not reminded of what the show actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have some stuff in store for you. It's just the huge, you know, except David's not here, which is a sad thing. But we soldier on. So why don't we soldier on, guys? It is time for The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Does anybody have a story that they would like to volunteer? Elsewise, I will go first.
I'm not okay with this. I have a thing.
Oh, never mind.
A thing.
You have a thing. Is it a news story? Or is
kind,
it?
I mean, we knew it, but it's weird that like next gen is here in a week.
Yeah. Go ahead and hit us with it then.
By the time that people are listening to this, I think you will be 3 days away from the launch of the PS4.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the 15th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you'll be less than a week away from the launch of the PS4, which is really kind of weird that, next gen and stuff.
The dawn of a new era was upon us. Yeah.
Is anybody excited about next gen?
I know
Cole's not. You canceled your pre-order.
Yeah. Like, it just, them canceling that one game was enough to get me to not want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't cancel it. They just pushed it back.
Nope, Watch Dogs isn't coming out. In fact, they're going around and finding everybody for even believing that Watch Dogs was even going to exist. Yeah. It's a very expensive mass hysteria. Yeah.
That's right. There was some IP from a line of canine timepieces that they couldn't get around. So,
good lord.
That was a reach.
So canine timepiece. It has, instead of having numbers, it just has little pictures of bones. And it's like, oh, look what time it is. It's time for some bones.
Yeah.
Dogs like bones, right? That's not like some story. That's not something I learned from Heathcliff. Like, cats love cat skeletons, right? Or not cat skeletons.
What?
Fish skeletons. Heathcliff eats fish skeletons. It's crazy.
It's Heathcliff, not Hannibal.
Oh, man. But it's
the version of Hannibal.
I don't know. Heathcliff just kind of seemed like literally a poor man's Garfield. Like, Garfield was living in a house. You know, people were making Photoshops of his comics without him in it. You know, it was the sweet life. Whereas Heathcliff, he was out there, you know, he was hustling for rock.
Yep. I too hope to one day be successful enough to be edited out of my own media. I'll know I've made it if they do like the Level remixes just without
the Level minus Dennis. Oh man. Oh boy. So next gen is a thing, and then like shortly after that we've got the Xbox One coming out.
What's the release date for that?
Like November 22nd or something like that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a week after the PlayStation 4. I don't know. I mean, I've seen some reviews trickle through. Like, first, the Assassin's Creed 4, the review of the PS4 version of that, and then I guess Call of Duty Ghosts came out here recently, and somehow they're able to put up reviews of these things, but they're just, like, they're saying, yeah, it's the same thing. And I just remember back during the launch of the 360, like, everything was like, oh, hey, it's Gun. It's pretty much the same version of Gun that's on the Xbox, but you have achievements, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
That's...
It's growing pains. Like, just so we're in this weird transitional time.
Yeah.
I remember that Splinter Cell Double Agent was one of those console jumping ones that was on, I think, PS2 and PS3. And it was a vastly different game.
Yeah, because they were made by different teams. And from what I understand, the PS2 one was actually better.
I did enjoy the PS2 one. I never played the PS3 one.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, especially from a graphics jump perspective, they were different. It feels like this generation, they've made a concerted effort to keep the games consistent.
Yeah.
And so I almost wonder how much of these kind of PS4 games, even in Xbox One, even though everyone talks about how the power has been unbridled, but really the developers, just because of economies of scale, are still working in the within the constraints of the current gen systems.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, very much so. Just because they don't want to have to duplicate their effort. You know, like, hey, let's put some higher res textures on this one, but otherwise, like, those were just assets we were making anyway. Right?
Yeah, let's not make two games.
Yeah.
So let me see here. I got a 360 at launch, and I got Perfect Dark Zero. and Condemned Criminal Origins. Yay, I love that game. And that was pretty much it until Oblivion came out.
I remember one of the big things about when those consoles came out is the fact that you could download demos, and like that seemed like a big deal to me, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, "Oh, I can download, you know, a bunch of games and just play a bunch of different games." Yeah. How naive.
I guess
I remember thinking, like, why would you ever buy a game? it's video game tapas, you guys.
Well, I remember Geometry Wars carried me a good long ways on that, too. Yeah. Which, you know, this is a patently false statement, but I've probably played a good deal as much Xbox Live Arcade games, or as many, or times, as I have, you know, actual retail discs. I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that, and I just know that once this comes out, there's going to be all kinds of exclusives that I will either A, not have access to, or, well, no, wait, now I've got this bitching computer and everything comes out on Mac. Sweet!
Dunzo.
Yeah. But,
The one thing that I'll say, and I'm sure anyone with a computer who, you know, wants to try even a little bit could figure it out, but the live streaming features on both consoles, I think, will wind up being a lot bigger than people expect. The kind of capture and publish video that both of them are doing.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
They're also pinning everything down so, like, it has to stay on Twitch. Like, you can't archive beyond.
I thought PlayStation did to YouTube.
So as far as I know, but I could be wrong as well. I just remember reading that and being really, really bummed.
So, I mean, either way, there is a tidal wave of content that is about to hit. And I think that'll serve as the best marketing for the new systems.
Yeah, people they love streaming. Content makers don't, but the platform holder generally says, yeah, we...
I think there's a lot of potential to that, because, I mean, even, like, for us, we could just do, like, a level play night where we just all, like, watch somebody play a new game, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd be totally down for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just do, I mean, yeah. Like, they're even building a streaming capability into Minecraft. That's not my story, but that's, you know, a related thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw someone post earlier today. They said, you know, a phrase I thought I would never utter is, if you guys can't play nicely in the same world, I'm going to put you in different worlds to her kids playing Minecraft.
Oh, kids, they love Minecraft.
Yep.
It's crazy. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to, I withhold judgment.
Do you think that Minecraft is like the Lego of today's generation?
That's a great comparison. I like that.
I mean, maybe like it's just that's where it is kind of the most popular. Not the most popular, but you hear, you know, I've heard anecdotes, like first person, of like kids or, you know, parents whose kids come up to them and say, you need to teach me how to write a mod for Minecraft. And they said, well, you have to learn to read first. It's like, I want Minecraft to do this. Well, you need to, you know, that's a mod. Well, how do I make that mod?
Yeah. That's when you know it's truly the new Lego, is when they start putting out kind of, well, I guess they kind of already have this, like, skins and sets themed after various movies and, you know.
Maybe.
Star Wars skinned Minecraft. Do they have that yet?
I'm positive. Like, you can skin your own character and you can make the, like, I guarantee you that was, like, the first thing that anybody ever made. Yeah. Like that and World 1-1 from Mario.
First there was Minecraft porn, then there was Minecraft Star Wars.
Well, it's in the Fun Center episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, we talked about how we were at that Fun Center and there was this music video up that was Minecraft style, and it was a Minecraft parody of Gangnam Style that was shot, quote unquote, in the Minecraft engine. It's like, okay, so we take like this ridiculously popular thing and this other, you know, okay, so it must be as popular as that, and also just play it in a place where kids are going to watch it. It's like, oh, this is some next level shit.
Kids 2 years from now, though, we're going to have no idea what Gundam Style is.
That's true.
That was a timestamp for humanity. A
little bit. It was like Mambo number 5.
It's a tramp stamp for humanity.
Title. I guess related to that, I guess Notch is going to show up on the Tonight Show on Thursday. So, like, not gonna. Last night, Notch was on the Tonight Show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How'd you do?
Crafty bastard. You know what? The language barrier was a definite impairment, but for being, just a video game developer, he did okay on television.
Wait, language barrier? What's his native language?
He's from Sweden.
Oh. Yeah. I guess his tweets are pretty fluent, so.
Oh, you know.
You got time to compose.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so there we go. Seamless segues, but to kind of like go into that and thinking about next generation hardware, you know, we've got this stuff coming out, but I mean, our attention for the past couple of episodes, you know, several months actually, has been towards the Steam machines and Steam OS, right? Mm-hmm. And there's been a little bit of noise happening around those. My story is pretty much that Valve has come out and said, like, they're not going to limit their games to just run on Steam OS. So it's not going to be like, you know, okay. Like if this was any other company, they'd be like, no, you have to run our game on our thing. But they're like, no, you won't see any exclusive killer app for SteamOS from us. We're not going to do that kind of thing, which it's Valve, right? So they weren't going to do it, but it's refreshing to hear them say it out loud. Like,
yeah.
You're fucking kidding
me? It's like, you know, it's like a loved one saying, I love you. You know, it's true, but it's nice to hear.
Exactly. Yeah. That would go against our whole philosophy to launch something that's exclusive to SteamOS or Steam machines. And in fact, whenever they talk to somebody, like just when they speak to developers, they say, make it run on as many things as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Not just our thing, but, you know, Mac, Linux, whatever. Because, well, A, Steam gets, or Valve gets a cut of anything that's sold on Steam. And if you increase your audience size, they'll get more money. But just because I think it's better for everybody.
Yeah. Although they are, I also saw concurrently that they are not going to allow third-party controllers.
Ooh, that's rough.
Yeah, which stands, I mean, everything you just said, I believe about Valve, but that seems out of character.
Poor MagCats, what are they going to do?
I know.
I mean, kind of poor Microsoft, because up until this point, they've really been the de facto PC controller. Right.
Yeah. That's true. Yep.
Yeah. It's exclusive to Steam OS.
Or the Steam machine. I think you can probably use any controller, or the Steam. You can use the Steam controller with probably anything.
Okay.
But they're not going to allow third parties like a Mad Catz to produce Steam controllers.
Okay. Yeah. So let's unpack this a little bit. So third parties will not be able to make the crazy. Let me see here. Dual touchpad accelerometer monstrosities that Steam is making. Like, they will not license out that technology. Oh, okay. The way that you phrased that made it sound like they weren't going to let Microsoft controllers or anything else run with. Yeah. Okay. I can understand that. I mean, that's kind of their secret sauce. Like, they've been developing that for a good long time, and, you know, hardware is different than, you know, blah, 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 on and on down the line.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm sure people wanted to reverse engineer it too. They just won't give out the spec. So it's not them being, you know, crazy, you know, evil about it.
Yeah. The other, since this has become the controller hour, have you guys seen that someone got a PS4 controller running Xbox? Or was, you know, got a PS4 controller to work with an Xbox.
With an Xbox One? Or?
Yeah, or with an Xbox 360. Don't know yet about Xbox One. But that's also bizarre. PS4 controllers will work with PC and Mac.
Yes, I have heard that, like, in a kind of limited capacity.
Yep. Mm. So that's a nice thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I like the idea that I can just use whatever controller is comfortable.
You know? Yeah, that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Oh man, that is good news. I don't know, and they've revealed like what the Steam boxes are going to look like, and they look pretty cool. I'm kind of excited. So CES is pretty much right around the corner, and I think that my purchasing decision or whatever is going to be determined by how let's see here, tempting that is. Like, if they have a $100 just streaming box that I can bring, you know, PC games or my Mac games over to my living room TV, that might be what I do instead of getting a next generation console for a little while, you know?
Yeah, I'll say that it's pretty tempting, and that's what I've been considering as well.
Yeah, or just like, you know, if they put out like a Steam box at $500, that would probably, I mean, solve quite a few of your problems, Ben, vis-a-vis, you know, computer gaming, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm not taking pot shots at you. I just know that your computer doesn't run very many games, and that's a sad thing.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to I will not deny that fact either. Yeah.
What I'm saying is I pity you.
Yeah. I pity my computer.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. It works for the show. That's all I care about, literally. That's How about you, Ben? Do you have a story?
I do. So first, I wanted to make mention of, this is the first time that I've put together the fact that Steam Machine is also the same name of the Daft Punk song.
That's pretty good. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so as we were talking about a Steam Machine, I was just thinking about the Daft Punk song. So my story is totally lightweight, but pretty enjoyable, in my opinion. This is just an article I stumbled across to put in the show notes. But it's just a video of WWE wrestling 2K14, where people have been making mods of the characters. And so somebody made a mod with a bunch of DC and Marvel superheroes. And so there's just videos of DC characters beating up Spider-Man. So if you click on the first video, it's pretty enjoyable to watch. So nothing strong on the news front, but
man,
great.
The title image, at least the one that I saw initially, was Spider-Man walking intently towards Captain America with a folding chair. I'll teach you to kick me out of the Avengers.
Yeah, watch the first video.
That's hilarious.
Whoa, ow. So, I just hurt my ears. My setup's all messed up, so I can't watch it. But okay, I see DC man, also known as Superman, pointing at Spider-Man. I don't know. This is a rabbit hole, but that will be included in the show notes. Wrestling games going strong. I thought that they stopped in N64, but apparently people buy a grip of them.
Yeah, apparently they kept going. Yeah.
It's fun because, like, you know, some of the people I follow on Twitter are apparently wicked into WWE. Uh-huh. And I've never understood that, but apparently people get crazy passionate about it. So,
Yeah. And I'm kind of lying, like, having worked retail, like, I know that the launches you have to look out for are not the Grand Theft Auto or the Call of Duty. It's the launch of NBA 2K and also WWE Wrestling. Because it brings out just like the worst elements of humanity. Don't think I'm being racist with the NBA thing. It's a bunch of frat guys.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't mention Madden in the list.
Madden done fall off. Like,
really?
Yeah. Madden isn't that big of a deal anymore.
I did not know this.
Yeah, it's a dying. So it used to be like, oh, I'm a Madden gamer. And then, I just play Madden and Call of Duty. Now it's just Call of Duty. And then the future is all wrestling all the time. Yeah.
That's great.
Human interest stories. The grind. Now it's time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing. Let's see here. I'm going to volunteer Ben to go first.
All right. I was going to do the same. I haven't been playing much. I went on vacation this weekend. So
oh, where to?
I went to Florida to visit a high school friend.
Oh.
It's one of my friends from high school. He's a marine biologist out there. Mm-hmm. And so got to hang out, chill on the beach, super relaxing. And most importantly, I got to bring back a Founder's Breakfast Stout and a Southern Tier Pumpkin, which I do not have access to.
Good man.
Yeah. So. No, that Founder's. Good.
Well, you were raving about the Founder's. I was raving about the Pumpkin. So same general message, though.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's been a minute since I've had Founders. I'm not taking advantage of my geographical location.
It's a seasonal too, so.
Is it? What season is it? Because I've always been baffled when it's not been available at the party source.
It's like winter, I believe.
Yeah.
But I somehow have one, so I don't know.
Well,
it's like 6 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, check the Best Buy date.
Yeah. Perhaps it's a fall to winter thing, but yeah.
Well, which means I need to go to Party Source and get some. Hmm. For people who are listening who don't know, Party Source is literally the Walmart of liquor that is right across the Ohio River.
It's like the Death Star of liquor.
Yeah. It's their liquor game ridiculous.
So inside baseball question, but have they finished construction on Party Source?
It's been like a couple months since I've been there, so I'm not sure. I know that they're putting in like what, the distillery?
Yeah, I drove past it today. It's not even close to finished.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, just checking.
Yeah. I used to go there a lot, but
Ben's going to come back when it's done.
I used to go there a lot, but then I got in that car accident. I'm really nervous about going across that bridge because you have to cross at 70 miles per hour at least 7 lanes of traffic in order to.
Oh yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's like I've got plenty of liquor stores near my house.
I was going to say
I would drive over.
Dude.
Yeah.
I would drive over, and again, inside baseball, hey, Cincinnatians.
You know what?
I would drive over and get on 75 just so I could go across that bridge without having to change change lanes.
Yeah.
I would cross the city so that I didn't have to cross those like 5 lanes.
Yeah. And if you try and merge right and go, you know, go up 50, like you end up having to merge left, like you like yield into a ramp with no visibility. So you just may just, you know, side slam your car into another car.
If one of us just randomly dies in a car crash, it was probably because we were going to Party Source.
Pretty much.
In pursuit of booze. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like there's a correlation.
The fatality rate from car crashes in Cincinnati is higher for people who are going to get beer than of people who have drunk too much beer.
Yeah. Which sucks because it's Kentucky. There's no laws over there. It's basically Mad Max, so there's no tax. Like, thank you, Rand Paul. Like, I despise your politics. However, there's no...
Two people go into Party Source, one comes out.
Well, both come out, like only one gets home. Yeah. See, this isn't inside baseball. I'm not going to cut any of this out because it's local color, right? People, you know, they may not be able to, like, you know, like understand what it means to go from 471 to, you know, to 50. However, when we have, you know, DuckCon here in Cincinnati, like at the convention center or whatever, or some kind of meetup, and people come from far and wide, you know, they're gonna be now like, oh man,
come see us. I will buy you all the beers.
We'll talk. I'm thinking. Don't worry. we'll talk, Dennis. We'll talk, Ben. I'm thinking, and if you're interested, email me or whatever. But yeah. So I'm just thinking, you know, I was feeling social. PRG got me feeling social. And there are plenty of people in this region who would probably be interested in doing that. So,
Let's do it.
Doing it. Yes. So,
did you play any fucking games?
Well, what part of Florida were you in, Ben?
Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
The Lod. It's pretty similar to Vegas, except people are a little bit older, but yeah, aggressive drivers. A lot of people are into their cars and boats. So.
Oh yeah, they're retired, so they have plenty of money to spend on a car and not a lot of life left, so they really don't care.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, if you're at the end of your life, why care about other people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Silly.
Yeah, but you were so Fort Lauderdale, that's like right down on the tip of the Wang too. So
yeah, dude, I had to cough the entire time I was there. No, it's cool. It's cool because waterway is like another mode of transportation. So like there's streets and then there's like water streets that people ride their boats on.
Do you have like hovercraft, like with the fan boats?
That would be cool. You would think that would be the mode of transportation, yeah, right? It would work on both. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of dummies there. They have boats and cars. They need to merge that into one.
No, ducks. Just like everybody drives around amphibious vehicles.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Ocean, yeah. Just go up on the beach. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
you decide you want to go to Spain, you gas up, and you just go.
Yeah. Nothing's holding you back there.
No.
But I did actually play video games before I went there. I played a little bit more of Batman, but only un poquito más.
The Batman? So,
what?
The Batman?
The Batman.
The goddamn Batman? Yeah.
Yeah.
Memes. Sorry, memes. No, is that a meme? Like, I've seen that. It stuck with me.
Yeah. Bale's cool. Anyway, I don't know. I still haven't really formed full opinions on it yet. I've been introduced to the Joker, I guess.
I hear his voice actor is pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah. And it does sound very similar to Mark Hamill's voice of it as well.
That's what I was going to ask is, okay, is it good in that, hey, he replicates Mark Hamill really well? Or is it good as in like, hey, this is a good Joker?
So, on its own merit. Yeah, so voice, it's similar to Mark Hamill, and visually it's a mix of Mark Hamill's and Dark Knight's Joker. So if they kind of had a Joker baby, then that's what this man. Is. Yeah.
Get on the internet.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I mean, Heath Ledger's already done Brokeback Mountain, so he's ready to go with that.
Well, he's also dead as fuck.
I can see the Joker, you know, getting over that, but
he kind of has multiple times. Yeah.
Wow, that went dark really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. I don't know. In general, the game is. I mean, it's. There's one review I read of it before I purchased it where it said it feels like a cover band, but of a game, you know? And I think that kind of rings true where it's like it has some cool stuff, but so far it has not accomplished a whole lot that the previous games have already accomplished. So.
Right. How's the hand-to-hand combat?
It's the same.
Okay, so they solved that problem.
What problem?
No, I just mean like just they did really well with the combat in Arkham Asylum. It was very similar for Arkham City, except they added a couple more gadgets and, you know, just kind of like, oh, why reinvent the wheel? Because we done solved it.
Yeah, no, the combat system's great, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, two button system, but then there's flourishes that you can add with more complex controls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's good.
Yeah.
That's surprisingly mature for, you know, a sequel to not have to feel like they're like, you know, hey, we've added six new, you know, combat wrinkles that, you know, six new ways to break bones or, you know, that sort of thing. Like, it's, hey, this is really good. Let's just keep a good thing going.
Yeah, I will always praise Rocksteady because, I mean, they know what to improve and what's good enough to, you know, so.
Yeah, that way too many gadgets in Arkham City.
You think?
I think so, yeah. They were like triple stacking them on various like on your hotkeys.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. I felt like there was just a little bit too much to do. All right, so between Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, they made a concerted effort to like not Metroid you, and by that I mean at the beginning of the sequel, take away everything by some kind of, you know, weird coincidence. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you started with your batarangs and you just like, in general, you didn't have to recover a lot of ground, right? Mm-hmm. So in this one, do they do something similar, or is it just kind of starting from scratch all over again?
Since it's an origin story, they can pull that off. And so, yeah, you don't have the same stuff from the get-go. Hmm. Some of the stuff you do have, but some of it is gone. Like the one thing in Arkham City, the thing that fires an electric thing and works on doors.
Yeah.
I forget what that's called. Might be called the Disruptor. Mm-hmm. You get that. I mean, you don't start off with it, but you get it later. But right. They can do that. It's an origin story. It's a prequel. So that kind of makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. But...
Yeah,
but I guess the other thing too is like the fact that it's like a prequel. It's kind of like I think they've already like made contradictions almost with like the later games. Like, so some of the things that have happened like don't really jive too well with the Arkham City and like what happens in there. So I don't know.
Is there an example that you can give, or would that spoil everything?
So. Things that appear to have happened for the first time in Arkham City, the second game, happen in the origin story, which doesn't make sense because it happened in the first time in Arkham City.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll be as vague as possible. Okay. But yeah.
Well, you're dealing with a kind of a limited, you know, canon of villains, right? So, like, there's going to be like, oh, here's Bane again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I don't know. All the creativity that was in the previous two games, you know, that's definitely not there in this game as much. Mm. I haven't seen it yet. I don't want to say that it's not there completely because maybe the game will improve as
it could have a turn. What's the so this is just revealing how little I actually know about this game. I've not really done any research or reading on it, but... what's the play field, you know, in Arkham Asylum? Obviously, you know, it was the asylum in Arkham City. Yep. It was, you know, a cordoned off part of the city. Is it like the construction site for Arkham Asylum? Like the origins, like, are you like walking around in the blueprints or what?
No. So this is, it's also Arkham City. Some of the things aren't developed. Yeah. Some of the things in Arkham City aren't as developed as they were in Arkham City. This is going to be a confusing conversation.
My head hurts.
So it's the same map as Arkham City. Is Arkham City. So it's the same map as Arkham City, the game. The map is of the city of Arkham.
Okay.
They have made improvements to it where in Arkham City, you know, there's very definite walls, you know, where you... you kind of know where you can't go through. This one opens it up a little bit and you can kind of explore places that you wouldn't explore previously. Here's another thing that I'll bring up that doesn't initially make sense. So, you know, in Arkham City, the watchtower in the middle of the map, the giant tower, it's the equivalent of the Citadel in Half-Life
2. Yeah, where Hugo Strange watches over. Yeah.
I was under the impression that was constructed by Hugo Strange when that a prison that is in this map in the origin story. Doesn't really make sense, you know?
That seems lazy. Doesn't Arkham Origins take place like 15-20 years before everything?
It's when he's just starting out, and so it's like Batman has only been fighting crime for maybe like a year or two. It's definitely a prequel, so it's before anything's happened in the other two games.
Okay, so this is hurting my head. So, like, they made a big deal in Arkham City about how this was, like, they cordoned off this area of the city, because Hugo Strange was able to pull a bunch of strings, you know, just in the wake of, you know, Arkham Asylum being destroyed and the events of that game. So, like, it would have, like, that was just a part of the city. Like, the theater where his parents were shot is in Arkham City. Mm-hmm. So is it like a berg or a oh, this hurts my head.
Oh, and here's another thing that I was kind of upset with about the game is if you go to that spot where his parents died, they had it in Arkham City, and there were like roses there or something.
Uh-huh.
If you go there in this game, there are chalk outlines there.
What? A year later?
Yeah, well, not even a year later.
Not a year later. That happened a
decade later.
Yeah.
So
I am the knight.
You go back to the same spot and you spray paint over their outlines, dog.
Yeah. I guess so, man.
Like one time you accidentally used like pink spray paint and people were like, Batman, why'd you do that? And he's like, oh, it's Valentine's Day, but it's like, dude, it's December, and you're like, I like to plan ahead, I'm Batman. Come on.
He's just running around screaming swear to me. I don't understand.
Yeah. You're asking me where Falcone is, but that doesn't happen for like a wicked long time.
Where's Falcone? I don't know.
Do they offer an explanation about that time gap and why Arkham exists? Because at least in Saints Row 4, they had the decency to just like say, yep, Matrix.
Yeah. No, so far that sort of thing has not been explained yet. So that's kind of the source of frustration.
This what I'm hearing is their margins on this game are huge.
The what?
So their margins on this game are huge.
So I don't know.
So this is apropos of the discussion. I don't want to like undercut your conclusion or whatever you were working towards, Ben. But the Humble Bundle is actually happening right now. The WB Humble Bundle for like right now. I think it's $5 or whatever. You can get Batman Arkham City and Batman Arkham Asylum in addition to like a bunch of other games on the Humble Bundle.
Damn it, you're gonna make me buy more stuff. Well, I won't ever have time to play.
Yeah, Arkham City is actually available on the Mac too. So
So yeah, I was gonna say those are two good games that if you haven't played those before, you should play
definitely.
Those.
They're high watermarks for this past generation, right?
Yeah.
Or the current one for another week. Can I reveal like a pet peeve? Like when people refer to like, oh, this is the ninth generation of consoles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not really as good as the sixth generation, by which I mean the PlayStation and the Saturn, but the N64, the fifth generation, the S8. Like don't number the generations. Just say what the fuck you're talking about. Sorry,
that's right.
But then how will we be elitist?
PlayStation did the work for you. It's the fourth PlayStation.
Yes. so angry. Like, just get off TV Tropes, you fucker.
God. Ben, you hit on, I think, you know, all my other Sony fanboyism aside, the Xbox naming conventions are just asinine.
But yeah, they're non-linear. At least PlayStation, at least Sony had the decency to be linear.
And no, it's the Xbox focus group is what it is.
Yeah.
So what did we get? You know, a room full of gamers that we recruited in our target segment to say was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and why would they spell out the Xbox One? Like, why would they spell the one on that? I don't know. That does not look attractive. You know.
X-Bone.
I don't know. I didn't mean to cut off your bad thoughts on this bad on this bad channel.
It sounds like an Adam West type of thing.
Well, yeah, same bad time, same bad channel.
I was about to come to my bad conclusion.
You haven't beaten the game yet, you know.
That's true. My bat build up to my I don't know.
Your bat-tissipation.
All right, I'm going to stop with the bat puns. Whereas, like, the first two games, like, you felt that the developers were smarter than you. Like, they could surprise you, and they could do things in really creative ways. Mm-hmm. This one has yet to do that. And so, like, they've introduced maybe, like, three or four different bad guys.
Bad guys.
But, yeah, or, you know, villains, whatever, super villains. But, like, none of them have been as well done as some of the villains' introductions in the previous two games. Right. Since I just encourage people to go play those games, I don't want to give away those moments. But, yeah.
Yeah, like, just, it's so, man, so good. I need to go back and play like Arkham City, because like I was in a major depressive episode like when I did that, and I don't remember anything about it.
Well, don't play it to the end, because you get in a major depressive episode if you beat everything, because then you're in an empty city. Yeah. All alone.
Womp, womp.
Nothing to do.
Yeah. Huh.
So whatever. I'll play more of it. I'll probably badmouth it next week.
I don't know. This hasn't been bad mouthing per se. Like you said, like, hey, the combat is good, like, because it's the combat from Arkham City, and the map is good because it's the map from Arkham City.
Well, that's the map's not good because it's not appropriate for the setting, you know?
Yeah.
And like, for example, there's another thing, just like a small thing, like on a ledge, like there was just like a bug that I noticed where Batman is like a foot off the ledge and his hands are gripping air, you know, and it's like you would never find a bug like that in the previous two games, you know.
I can't cite specifics, but I like Arkham City was kind of coming apart at the seams a little bit.
Yeah,
for me, I, you know, just different platforms and different conditions and blah blah blah. But
yeah.
But yeah, I just need you, again, I hate to like typecast you or whatever, but if somebody like who among the four of us has the most affection for this franchise, I am incredibly interested to hear this, to hear your impressions of it. Right,
called it as far as if this opinion stays throughout the entire game, then I will not be surprised, since I don't know. I kind of had a feeling of dread ever since they said that they were not going to have Rocksteady as the developer for this game. So
Can you say confirmation bias?
Yeah, probably.
You, well, you can still be surprised. Like, you can still have an awesome time with it.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not an awesome time. Like, you can never say, like, oh, it just takes, like, the, you know, just get past the first 8 hours and it'll be good.
Yeah. You know. Dark Souls.
Well.
Boom. Roasted.
Yep, I stand here rebuked. Oh, have you played anything else, Ben? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, Dark Souls is the exception that proves the rule.
Kind of, yeah.
I need to play Grand Theft Auto. I haven't picked it up since November, but anybody who played GTA Online in October is apparently gifted $500,000 that they could buy stuff with.
God damn it, I knew I should have signed in.
Womp womp. But, however, this will... So I was playing GTA Online. I guess I was playing this last week. I had finally earned enough money where I could buy like a small like condo or whatever, a small house, and it came with a garage. So I thought it would be cool because I could park whatever vehicles or whatever. And so I do this. I spend the last of my money on this as well, and it's kind of cool. Well, I don't know. So I got this. I got a nice car, so I drive it there. And then a blip comes up as soon as I pull out to my garage and says, this car has a tracker on it. If you want a car for your garage, you have to purchase it online at this website, you know? And it's like, oh, okay, I don't have any money anymore. And it's like, oh, you know, trade in actual money for GTA money. So it's kind of like I've reached the point where I don't know why I should continue playing GTA Online. Because it's essentially like a Second Life sort of simulator. It's like,
oh, man,
grind for hours and then buy a car that you can look at, you know, and that's
all. Okay, is it legitimately grinding or is it enjoyable to play?
I would say it's leaning towards the grinding side. So, like, they have races and stuff, and that's fun. But if you're trying to get money to do something, then you are not really doing things for fun anymore. You're kind of grinding essentially. So
I guess that's a distinction I feel is important to make, because SSX had a, you know, buy credits with real money type of option, but it was totally thrown in after they had built the entire system to be sustainable without that. And I don't mind that at all, because if I want to get the, you know, coolest boards and play at the most aggressive level right away, I, you know, kick in $5 and get that, great, because I can totally get there with a regular amount of effort otherwise. But I feel like more and more you see games that almost have microtransactions, which is becoming a bad word, microtransactions built in that, you know, are trying to force them rather than being an expediter or, you know, a bonus.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the thing though is like, I don't know why I should play GTA Online. Like, I don't know what I would be building towards, you know? Mm. Like, yeah. So,
but then you shouldn't have to be building towards something to enjoy it. Like, you should play GTA Online because it's a fun way to blow off steam on the weekend.
Perhaps
is it almost by having that level of incentive system they disincentivize casual play?
Well, I mean, I guess the thing is it gets awfully repetitive. It's not like a Modern Warfare or something where you can kind of get into the round, like, you know, the round by round action. Like, mm-hmm. the mechanics of the GTA like shooting system aren't good enough to stand alone. The racing's pretty good, and like that can be fun. But by and large, I mean, if you're just in the open world, a lot of it is people kind of driving around, killing one another for not a lot of reason. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't know what the point of playing it is, you know? So this is not to detract from the game, because I still highly recommend the single player. It's fantastic. But yeah, I don't exactly know what the point of the GTA Online is anymore.
Can I just ask for a small point of clarification?
Sure.
The promise of a reward at the end makes something grinding?
Is that a question?
Yeah. I just want to make sure that's what we're saying. The idea that you could run around and just do this thing and, you know, whatever, but the idea that they give you something to work towards, that makes it grinding?
I think it's because they lock options off.
Okay.
That, you know, the only point I can see is, oh, you should play this game so you can unlock this, you know, like, because, mm-hmm. you know, they very much encourage you to, you know, buy a house, buy a car or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Let me amend it. And I think maybe this will clarify it. Yes, that is the case. If the thing you are doing, you would never do normally.
Okay.
So putting a reward at the end doesn't make it grinding. Putting a reward at the end to get a player to do something they wouldn't do otherwise is.
So doing racing and just kind of generalized mayhem and killing people isn't something that people do in Grand Theft Auto V. This isn't something that I genuinely believe. I just want to make sure that we're presenting a sane argument.
I would say, like, people do it in the storyline, because uh-huh. those are well-tailored missions. Okay. In GTA Online, there's nothing...
Oh, it's just, like, just kind of like, hey, go do this shit, because... Yeah.
Well, there's only a few missions. I think I've only played, like, maybe one. Mm-hmm. But they are far less polished than any of the ones in the store, in the campaign. It's usually, like, go here, get a vehicle, shoot people who chase you, and then bring it back to mm-hmm. somewhere else.
Yeah, so, like, an MMO mission kind of thing, where it's just kind of, like, plug and play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I
know literally nothing, so I'm just asking that for a clarification.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think even playing the single player, like just roaming that world, I think that is more fun than the GTA Online. Like, I'm totally okay with exploring there, you know, like mm-hmm. that's fine. Like, GTA Online even inhibits that, because when you're there, you have people who will, like, kill you when you're just trying to explore and do something.
As opposed to just, like, things only turn dangerous if you, you know,
Furthermore, they have like this money management system where if you have money and someone kills you, mm-hmm. they can steal your money. So you constantly have to get your cell phone out on GTA Online and transfer your money into like your savings account they can't take it from there. It's not like that. I can't just, you know, enjoy the exploration of the game.
They're also now enforcing real-time jail sentences if you get caught.
25 to life.
Yeah.
You have to roll into character.
The game and let the game run through.
So I think, like, the game that GTA Online had a lot of potential. I think if they instead would have done something like Payday for the multiplayer, mm-hmm. I think that would have been, like, flawless, because that would have totally matched the point of the
single player
campaign. Yeah. And that's like the highlight of the game, you know, like that's the fun part. So if they gave more of that to the player and were able to have it so that everyone could do that together, mm-hmm. that would have been great. But
yeah, and you could literally do the aspect of the single player where you have different people with different responsibilities, and instead of just switching between them, you know, just everybody carry, you know, holds their own line, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Oh well.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. So yeah, I have two bummers of stories. Sorry, guys.
That's okay. Dennis, why don't you bring us up?
Yeah, I can bring us up because I've really been enjoying the two games that I've been playing, or at least the ones I'll talk about this week. I've been continuing to play Sir You Are Being Hunted and Rayman Legends and a little more Trine 2 just recently. So I play a ton of games, but the two worth talking about this week are DEF CON and Mass Effect 2.
I found you guys.
I found Mass Effect 2.
You thought it was you thought it was Took, but it weren't.
Yes, yeah, and I can't believe it. It was really kind of nice the way that I happened upon it. We just kind of decided that, hey, you know, let's go through. There was like a donation program going on, and let's just go through our stuff and anything that we haven't used in a couple of years. Let's get rid of it. Let's give it away.
Yeah, minimize.
And I've been out in my garage and looked for Mass Effect 2 probably 20 times, not exaggerating, since moving into this house, because I knew it was in there somewhere and just couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. But finally, in this process of kind of going through and purging to give stuff away, I got back my my copy of Mass Effect 2, which is really exciting. Nice little moment there. Felt good. Yeah.
It's like your garage got drunk and stole your game.
Yeah. So Cole, what I'm saying is, if you come clean my house, maybe you can get your game back.
I'm too busy cleaning my own house. I have a very regimented schedule, if you can believe that.
Cole. But yeah, so the first, you know, Mass Effect is a game known for its decisions, and the first big decision I had to make was whether to start fresh or to try to pick up where I left off, remembering virtually nothing of the storyline.
How would you have started fresh? Like gone out and gotten the trilogy, or
Started from Mass Effect 2. They do a little adventure comic or interactive comic.
Oh,
at the
yeah, so
that,
you can do your little matrix of like, I was faced with the decision to do this with Arachni, and I did this.
Yeah, which is interesting because it gives you, well, first off, it lets you kind of see really easily what all of the meaningful decisions were from from one game to the other.
Yeah.
The other thing is you very clearly get the bent of how the writers would like you to decide.
Yeah, I kind of heard that motion comic was garbage, so I never played it because it's strictly optional on the 360, you know.
Yeah, well, and you had the save to fall back on, right?
Yeah, yeah. But like both of you, like your Mass Effect legacy has been compromised by brigands.
Uh-huh.
Ben, you're the 360 that you played Mass Effect 2 or 1 on was just like straight up Took, right?
Yeah, it was stolen on Christmas Day.
I didn't know that. That makes it so sad.
I know, right?
Some Grinch. A brigand and a Grinch.
Some Turian.
There are noble people, Dennis.
Yeah, you are missing the point of Mass Effect, Dennis.
Most of them are Buddhist. Actual fact, look it up in the Codex.
Actual fictional fact.
Boom, that's a smoke bomb. Now I'm out of the room, and I'm right behind you. Oh, wait, what? Yeah.
Yeah, I elected to start fresh, which then I had to resist this OCD impulse to try to replicate exactly every decision I had made, which I'm surprised at how little of the game I remembered. So I'm glad that I started fresh.
Can you define start fresh for me? So like just kind of like either try to replicate your decisions from the first game or like
no new game entirely. I think I complete with like a different class of character.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So like the default Shepard for Mass Effect 2 is actually really heavily Renegade. So you just like took that as your.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. Like all the decisions that it assumes you made were Renegade for the purposes of the plot.
I custom built mine, so I'm still playing as a Paragon. So I took the most Paragon-esque
decisions from one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, not Decisions from One. The origin story.
Okay.
So it's the Decisions from One are not clearly Paragon or Renegade.
Oh yeah, they are. Like in the context, it actually gives you Paragon or Renegade points. So like eliminating the Rachni is really heavily Renegade. Saving. Let's see here. Obliterating the council in order to install humans as the new council is like the most renegade thing you can do,
which I did not do. But yes. in the comic, it gives you so little context that it's I'm going to contradict myself. No, so you can kind of tell what option the writers want you to take in each scenario as you're making these decisions.
Yeah,
and it seems like they're most of the time writing it to be. Paragon is what you choose.
Yeah.
So like don't kill Rex when you're, you know, arguing. Yeah. With him.
Notwithstanding that it's not actually a choice for the majority of players. Like really? For the majority of players, you don't have enough points either way to either talk him down or threaten him down.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
What's that?
I saved him.
Okay.
I don't know, Paragon, whatever. Yeah. I'm just lamenting at the fact that it's gone. Sorry.
That's fine.
Yeah. but that one didn't clearly give you Renegade or Paragon points in the comic. Like it's not clear. Although you can kind of puzzle it out. But yeah. when you choose your background, so like you can have an origin story and then an origin and a like reputation, I guess.
So it's like it's your circumstances from which you were born, and also like the thing you did in the military that brought you into being a Spectre.
Right.
I'm colony, or I'm Earthborn, or like I'm the sole survivor, or I'm like a cutthroat kind of person. Yeah.
Right. So I chose the two most Paragon options. But then instead of going with the soldier class, which I did in my first playthrough, I went with Vanguard.
Yeah, that's the way to go, especially in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. So what I kind of knew from having played the game before was I enjoyed using shotguns, and no one in the squad is good at using shotguns.
Except Jack. Jack is your Vanguard. Yeah.
I have not used her enough to tell one way or another. Like,
yeah.
Everyone else, there's the Krogan and Jacob.
Yeah, you have Grunt. Yeah.
Grunt, that's right. Grunt and Jacob I've used, and both of them are just morons.
Wait, so have you played Mass Effect 2 before?
Yeah, and then I lost it. And then I found it.
Okay, how far in were you when you played it?
I had just made the decision on whether or not to kill the Solarian scientist that you find.
Oh, so you were on Morden's loyalty mission. So you were in the back half of the game.
Yeah, all those kind of happened non-linearly, so I can't remember who else I did or not. I just remember that being the last thing I did before I thought it got stolen, but just lost it, actually. So,
okay. Well, your save game got stolen.
Actually, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even have the option to continue where I left off.
Yeah,
so.
Like I was going to say, like I was that's why I was asking you to clarify. Also, my copy of Silent Hill Homecoming, but that's neither here nor there.
That one is legitimately gone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that one.
That's not your fault, man.
So
I just like saying things to make you feel bad. I'm a good friend.
I know. I need to be taken down a peg every now and again.
No, you don't.
I really like the Vanguard power set, and that's been a lot of fun. The thing that's just been impressed on me as I started playing the game again is how little time you actually spend in combat.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of your you know, upgrades and leveling up is revolving around improving these skills, and you spend a ton of time like organizing your arsenal, essentially. Or at least I do, because I'm obsessive compulsive. But then most of the game is... I remember hearing the quote that Mass Effect 2 is essentially a dating sim where sometimes you have to shoot people.
And you're just dating anybody, dude. You don't even care.
Basically. But like, so I spent probably an hour and a half playing it last night. And in that time, I researched some stuff. And I did a whole bunch of planet mining, which, God, that is addictive.
Yeah, after they patched it.
Yeah, I don't know what it was like before the patch.
Real slow.
What changed?
They just increased the speed of the cursor. I think it was always fixed for the PlayStation 3 version, but for the period of time that I played it on the 360, it was incredibly slow.
Yeah, I still
did it because, you know, those resources are really valuable. But
because you are a human Roomba, as am I.
As are we all.
Yeah. But yeah, so I did that, and then I went and visited a crash site and kind of explored that and had emotional memories of the people who had crashed.
Oh, yeah, from Normandy 1. And the game's like 4 years old. We couldn't spoil that.
Yeah, sure. And then I went and met a new crew member and talked with him. Mm-hmm. And then I came and I did his hair, and we talked about feelings. And I'm like, I never even drew my weapon. Like,
yeah,
it was just... And it was fun, it was engaging, and it was, I feel, worth the time. And it's just, mm-hmm. that, I think, speaks to why there's so much passion in this group for Mass Effect as a series. It's like, it wears all the trappings of a third-person shooter, and yet just does all this other stuff so, so well.
Yeah. And like the combat is so granular, not granular, I mean, just like small, you know, like they're very short skirmishes that mm-hmm. you do that last 3 to 5 minutes, and you can plan them out and you can test out different combinations of these powers. There's just enough to make you feel like you have, you know, like a little bit of agency over the way things go. You know, it's really well balanced, but like the cool stuff is actually like walking around and getting to know these characters, you know, like mm-hmm. this the notion of a crew. And just, it's, you know, we said it so many times on the previous show, you know, like on DTR, but like it needs to be reiterated here. Just like that mm-hmm. structure, especially of 2 and like 3, this is where they really went astray and like lost it. But like mm-hmm. 2 took like the Firefly structure of like, we're going to make each mission an episode about a particular person, mm-hmm. right? A particular member of your crew. And, like, that's what it's going to be about. And it's going to be this little self-contained 90-minute thing that you just do mm-hmm. and learn more about either the world or this person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's also an hour and a half investment at least anytime you want to do anything in the game. So, you know, keep your schedule cleared.
A little bit, yeah. Maybe hour and a half is overstating it. Like, I just, you know, that's my default, like... I can't get anything done in less than an hour and a half. So.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind like saving midway through the mission, like it totally allows you to do that. But to mm-hmm. complete an objective, I feel like takes, you know, each of those vignettes is very robust. Like there, mm-hmm. I don't feel like there are any throwaway missions, mm-hmm. at least not yet. And, but that means that they are all kind of meatier.
So cool. I wanted to get your opinion on something. Do you think Dennis should play Mass Effect 3 after Mass Effect 2?
I think so. Just get closure.
I think you shouldn't.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, would I say, like, put it on easy and, like, take the path of least resistance through it? Yes.
But no, because that's exactly the opposite of what makes Mass Effect 2 good. All of the little filler and all the little mm-hmm. side quest stuff is what makes Mass Effect 2 so good. So that feels really, really weird to me to recommend zooming through Mass Effect 3.
I mean, not zooming through. Like, you know, do what you feel interested in, but don't follow the inclination that I think that all three of us have, which is, you know, to, like, seek out those things and just, like, intentionally make more work for yourself, right?
But I feel like that's rewarded in Mass Effect 2, and that's why it's so good.
Oh,
I will say that Mass Effect 2 is great. Mass Effect 3 is not so great. You should just play this game as if it's the last game.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend playing it right away. I think that, like, if you give yourself some time and, you know, if it pops up on PSN Plus, I would not discourage you from playing it.
Okay.
Just because, you know, like, I wanted to know what happened to those characters. You know?
Sure. I mean, maybe watch a Let's Play or read, like, a synopsis.
I don't know. I mean...
Why don't we see? We'll see how I feel once I actually finish Mass Effect 2 in 3 years.
Yeah, so I'm not a Let's Play watcher guy, so I wouldn't be the person to say, like, do this or don't do this. Uh-huh, but uh-huh. And then again, you know, let the chain be unbroken. I carried all of my decisions through from 2007 to 2012.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah, So, but you may have investment. I don't know. Just do what you feel like.
Yeah. Don't you guys tell me what to do.
Yeah.
So
either way, you're not the boss of me. It's like super cheap. It's like $9.99.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I said, it will. If I'm very resolute that I will play Mass Effect 2 through to conclusion.
Yeah. That's why you should. None of us would discourage you from that.
Yeah, and then we'll I'll get a little space to breathe and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Mass Effect 2? I was going to say questions, but you guys probably know infinitely more about these games than I do. So.
I'm just excited to see what you think about kind of the end game and the way that shakes out.
Yeah. Well, it's very promising to me that even going back through stuff that I've played before, it holds up.
Yep.
So, that's if anything was going to be, lose its luster, it's this first part that I've played. And that's holding up very well. So it's good. And then DEF CON was, it's like a little indie game. It was on one of the Humble Bundles. And I played it with Geolaw, who's like, this is the Geolaw episode, man. So,
this is by Introversion Software, the guys who do Prison Architect.
Yeah, yep. And Darwinia and Uplink and a bunch of other stuff. I think Prison Architect is their big new one that they're probably known for.
Yeah, it's the most recent one, yeah.
Yep. But it's haunting. So this is basically what happened was, I got this game, I hadn't played it yet, and Geolock kind of invited me into a match, like an online multiplayer thing. And I'm like, I have no idea. I literally know nothing about this game. Let's try it. Like I'll just jump in and see how I fare playing completely blind. And I load it up and the main screen is this like 70s style, war games map of the world and a woman crying in the background.
Jesus.
And I'm just like, what the hell have I gotten myself into? And so, it's basically kind of it's a really, really dark nuclear George Bush style risk nuclear.
To give some context, the game's tagline is the world's first genocide 'em up.
Yep.
Ooh.
it's global thermonuclear war and nobody wins, but maybe, just maybe, you can lose the least.
Yeah, or make the other people lose the most.
Yeah,
as is the objective. But yeah, or I think the other tagline for it is everybody dies.
Yeah, maybe. it is rich ground for taglines.
Yeah, it's and but surprisingly minimalist in the game. So literally, your whole screen is just this map of the world, and you can zoom in and out and scroll around it. But there's nothing fancy.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you start out and you're just kind of placing your different armaments and, setting your fleet up of ships and, putting out radar stations. And then you start, doing flyovers to try to find stuff where your enemy is hidden stuff. And then, it just basically, as you move from DEF CON 5 to DEF CON 4, 3, 2, 1, you get progressively stronger weapons and tactics available to you. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this, where do you hit first? How hard do you hit? Do you wait for your enemy to kind of throw their first wave at you so they expose their vulnerabilities and then you go for it? It's from that perspective, it's really fun. But then from the perspective of you get your population losses measured in millions as this game plays out, it's really, really haunting.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack or lack thereof is, like I said, there's a woman crying in the background when you start up, but it's essentially like you were sitting in a control room late at night watching this unfold. Mm-hmm. There's just no real, exciting music to speak of.
Nobody's playing Ride of the Valkyries.
Yeah. It's very muted with just random people kind of dicking around in the background or losing their shit or coughing or, and it's just, a great example of how games can kind of make you feel stuff or mull over stuff without ever trying to force you to engage with it. You could play this game for hours and never really ponder some of the stuff that it's going over. But then once you do kind of look at it with a critical eye and go, oh, there's some stuff going on in the background here that's really intentional, or, you know, this, yeah. this is a very interesting statement. It holds up really well. Yeah. So, so after getting my ass kicked, in multiplayer, I went through and did a tutorial and tried some regular missions. My one big complaint is that everything happens either way too fast or way too slow in the game. And you can control the time scale, but even at the fastest time scale, you know, where you're essentially fast forwarding through the game, your fleets move incredibly slow, almost to the point of not really being useful. Like they might as well be fixed. They move so slow. And then, you know, sometimes with, you know, different missile launches happening, even when you slow it down all the way, stuff is happening too fast for you to really take in, which I think that second one is more intentional than the first one, but it's still a minor annoyance in an otherwise great game.
To jump back just a little bit, like the notion of, you know, kind of making making you do something for a gameplay purpose, but then inviting deeper thought about that, you know, that seems to be a little bit of their modus operandi. I'm not sure what statement the, you know, the Darwinia games are trying to make. To me, it always just looked like a real-time strategy puzzle game with cute little dudes. But like, definitely, you know, Prison Architect, you know, talks about kind of the commodification of human life and just kind of like what that does to degrade everybody involved, right? And that kind of seems to be a little bit of what they're dipping into with, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, here's your score. It's how many millions of, you know, candles you snuffed out.
For sure.
You know, like just that is, you know, the notion of making a game that is political but not overtly so, right?
Or just, you know, let you come to on your own timing the depth that's there. I feel like, you know, if you watch a movie or read a book, there's a climax, and that climax is at a fixed point, and they build you up to it, and then it happens, and then it's over. And, you know, whether or not that was the right time or way for you is, you know, can vary. Whereas with the game, they put all that out there, and then they just kind of let you experience it at your own speed, realize things as you go. And so as you come to these realizations, they're not forced, they're not on a time scale. They're just kind of, you truly come upon them instead of being led to them, as kind of happens with any other medium, which is great.
And it sounds like they're making some statements about kind of the mundanity of evil or whatever, like, you know, just kind of like by not having Rite of the Valkyries, but having, you know, maybe some office murmuring, or maybe the sound of a coffee machine in the background is kind of like, oh, this might be what the apocalypse sounds like. Not, you know, hellfire and, you know, screaming Latin choruses, but just, you know, people milling about and doing their job and following
orders. Watching a video screen, absolutely.
You know, like that's a pretty powerful statement that I just made right there based on this thing I never played. It's a powerful statement. It sounds like they're making.
I mean, the other thing is kind of you can write your own narrative because, you know, you choose what country or region you're playing as.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of almost, you know, you're nuking this city that is the bad guys because they, you know, and then you tell yourself why they X, Y, Z deserve it, essentially. Or, you know, it is very much an us versus them scenario. So you kind of, you tell your own story and make your own justifications for it. And it leaves that open to you, which is I think very, very unique to a game versus any other medium.
Yeah.
So yeah, good stuff. And it's also, you know, they did that with a multiplayer game, which is phenomenal. Like, and I feel like almost any other context, especially with RTSs like a StarCraft or something, there's so much of an optimization, or, you know, your clicks per minute need to be fast enough, or, you know, a Call of Duty murdering hundreds of people on a battlefield, but it never strikes this chord. Whereas DEF CON finds a way to be just as competitive, you know, and just as engaging at the same time.
Yeah.
Hey, Cole.
Yeah, Ben.
Do you know who already made the statement about the mundanity of evil?
I'm sure it was some kind of like person much more smart than I.
It's The Wire, dude.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. No, it's I've got it on my hard drive, dog. Like I straight up do. I never realized that that Holly from The Office was on The Wire.
I don't know who Holly from The Office.
Holly? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She's the HR rep that Michael ends up marrying.
Oh, her. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, didn't know that. But yeah, no, it's just like when just people doing their jobs. Like that's what it looks like. Any one of us could be doing evil and we don't even know it. You know, just
you guys,
because
I'm doing evil right now.
Just because our entire just because our entire lives are predicated on suffering, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's a broken world. It's not hard to do evil.
Yeah. It's hard not to do evil. Mm-hmm. It feels so damn good. Yeah. What Humble Bundle is that a part of? Because I'm surprised I don't own it.
The Humble Introverted Bundle.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Humble Introversion Bundle. It was all their games in a bundle.
Yeah, I guess
so. I don't know if it's still up.
Yeah, I guess I didn't pick it up because I didn't. I'll probably get it now. I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. I tend to buy things.
The world is your oyster.
Yes, it is. So is that everything for you, Dennis?
That's everything for me.
Huh. To Cole.
To Cole. All right, cool. So I've got two this time. Let's do this. One of these is from a couple weeks ago, just because there's something more recent, but it you know, involves a little bit more conversation. I want to get the short one out of the way. So there's this whole like subgenre/class of browser games that are just watching numbers get bigger.
Is this like a cookie clicker?
Yes. Something like Cookie Clicker. Not Candy Crush. There's some other one that's like that. It's sweets based. it's like Cookie Clicker, I don't know. But the particular variant that I dipped my toe into in order to, you know, just like see this was Clicking Bad.
Of course it was. Of course it was. How could it have been anything else?
I love that you just sound so disappointed. Like, God damn it, Cole.
No, there's no disappointment there. It's just like, now that you, it's one of those things, now that you've said it, there's literally, I can't believe that I did not assume that right away. Like, of course.
So if you're not familiar, sorry, if you're not familiar with this, you know, just kind of like you start out and you click a button and you get a thing and it adds to your balance sheet or whatever, and you click and you click and you click until you, oh man, I get like this update like that gets me more things per click, and I click this and it's like, oh, it gets me an update that produces like stuff automatically. Right?
Mm-hmm. It's like, so it's curiosity.
Yeah, yeah, it's curiosity. And then like eventually you go from, you know, producing, you know, something that is, you know, on the order of magnitude of, you know, maybe ones, tens, or hundreds.
One
maybe.
Teeth at a time.
Yeah. Like, yeah, one teeth up to billions. Is billions, oof. Jesse, with a B. Billions. and Clicking Bad is kind of the variant of that. So I'm, you know, like, it's obviously not licensed. It's not something that Vince Gilligan had anything to look over. But it's you know, Cookie Clicker or, gosh, I want to say, like, Candy Rush or something. God damn it. Like, people are out there screaming and pounding on their pounding on their steering wheels. God damn it, Cole, because you can't remember the name of the other one. But yeah, no, it's you're cooking meth, and you have your meth empire. And this ruined a day of work. Anybody who's listening, you know, if you work, like, you know, don't blow up my spot or anything, but yeah, you know, it's like I opened it up because I saw it on Twitter. This was a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. I'm, you know, I've never tried one of these games before.
Wait, you, like, started this a couple weeks ago and you're talking about now. This ruined more than a day at work.
No, dude. No, I just didn't want to talk about it. I was ashamed. I started it at like 9:30 on a work day and I ended it like maybe at like 9:30 p.m. and by that time I had a space station that was producing methamphetamine for the entire galaxy. All right. But you're pressing a button, and it's like, okay, you're cooking every batch by hand. And it's like, oh, why don't you upgrade from your kitchen to a shed? Why don't you upgrade from your shed to an RV? Why don't you upgrade from your RV to to an underground laboratory? Why don't you upgrade from your underground laboratory to a space station? There's more stuff in between that. But what's really interesting about it, so like from my understanding, you know, Cookie Crush or whatever it is, cookie clicker is all about just kind of amassing as many cookies as possible. Mm-hmm. And like I think Cookie Clicker 2 has like a character customization. I'm telling tales out of school. I don't know shit from shit. But in this, like, you actually have to manage your risk. So you have production and distribution, and you go from like street dealers to, you know, buying off the president of a corrupt island nation in order to sell your product.
Dude, you know? So this is like, remember the game on the TI-83?
It's like Drug Wars a little bit. So it's not so much buy low, sell high, as Drug Wars was.
But they had the risk thing of which city you were going to go to distribute whatever drugs you had.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you had this much chance of being popped by the police. Mm-hmm. But like in this one, you know, just like depending on how high profile you are, like everything that you buy, either by production or distribution, has a risk associated with it. And you can buy lawyers, and you can buy, you know, just various, you can bribe politicians in order to get that down. And you also have the risk of an IRS audit, which is how much of your money is being laundered. So you have to buy like fronts for your business as well. So the game, you know, eventually becomes about how do I design this perfect system? You know, like how do I afford as much distribution as I need to keep my inventory low, and also as much, you know, money laundering as I need to, you know, reduce my risk of IRS audit, but also, you know, give me enough money quickly enough to increase my production to get to these, you know, higher levels, right? And you can increase your purity, which increases your yield per batch, you know, more money that you can sell. But like once you reach that equilibrium, like that's when the game ends, which is just kind of like I could just leave this running forever, and it would just, you know, rack up more and more money, and I would run out of stuff to buy. So I didn't even go ahead.
I was just saying this is like some thinly veiled not metaphor, but like you're actually manipulating the stock market. Just you don't know it, and some dude is making millions.
Oh,
off
yeah,
of your,
yeah.
It's your like, efficiency model.
It's like whatever protein folding, where like you think you're playing. Yeah. You think that you're solving a puzzle game, but you're actually piloting a drone to kill kids in Africa.
Oh
yeah,
and it went dark again.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, no, I was actually just saying the plot of the movie Toys. So,
I've never seen that movie. Thanks for ruining it.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like 3 years before my time. But, yeah.
You're older than me, Ben. I'm unstuck in time. I know this.
I was going to say we both know that argument doesn't hold water.
Yeah. So I don't know how much there is to say about it, except that it's a Breaking Bad themed like Drug Wars kind of cookie clicker. But that notion of risk really brings a little bit of texture to it, and it makes me interested in playing it, or it made me interested in playing it and blowing off a day of work. Not blowing off, you let it run in the corner, obviously. dear God, don't fire me.
So this is essentially like achievement the game, right? You know,
a little bit, or like progress quest or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it just speaks to the power of an unlock to the player psyche.
It's the power of watching numbers go up. Like I found myself like as I was trying to, you know, like just I found, you know, it's a creative line of work that I'm in. I say that fully aware of how douchey it sounds, but like, you know, a lot of time is spent trying to think through a thing. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think all of us have that such, you know, all of us are fortunate enough to be in a line of work that requires, you know, some measure of creativity. So you find like work doesn't always look like work. And on that day, work for me looked like staring at this number going up as I tried to write a script. You know. So, yeah.
So the video was a loading screen.
Yes. A loading screen for my brain. Yeah. I'd recommend everybody like give it a shot, like maybe on a weekend, like if you know start it at like 8 when you make your coffee and then just let it run for the day, you know, you can blaze through it pretty quick. But Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So.
So that was the small one, right?
That was the small one. I spent a lot of time on it. Yeah. The other one is Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that came out here like a week or so ago for the 3DS. It is the continuation of the Phoenix Wright games, which I have a tremendous fond streak for, a soft spot. I about said a fond spot, but I corrected myself. Yeah, but it continues the story after after Apollo Justice. It's the same goofy stuff, like the, you know, anime, visual novel, comic kind of thing with the logic puzzles slash just kind of paying attention puzzle kind of things where you're just kind mm-hmm. of like, oh, that thing that person said doesn't really make a lot of sense. But yeah, it looks and plays great. Like, you know, for as much as the story doesn't do too much special compared to other things, like, oh boy, I wonder if this person he's defending, maybe he's going to turn that around and one of the witnesses is going to be the, you know, it's like an episode of Law and Order, right?
Yeah, sure.
Or an episode of Matlock. but yeah, but it, like this, the you know, the jump to the 3DS actually does a lot of favors. So instead of being these, you know, static drawn sprites of the characters kind of going through these different poses and animations, they're actually these very highly detailed 3D models. And by highly detailed, I mean, you know, they're still anime styled, but they cycle through these animations and they have, you know, different camera moves and things that actually kind of sell the quote unquote acting a little bit more.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that works, you know, just because you spend so much time looking at, you know, people posing in a still way or, you know, cycling through an animation Fat Albert style as you're reading, as you're reading dialogue, that actually improves the experience a great deal. Right. So every game has kind of introduced a gimmick about how to, you know, discern if somebody's telling the truth or not. And this one, at least what I've seen so far, it's about like figuring out, their mood in relation to what they're saying. So you're kind of like, oh, they're actually like doing this thing that they what they're saying indicates they should be sad about it, but they're actually kind of like relieved or happy or surprised. And it's like okay, so let's figure that out. And it's like this little like bit of insight that you get from these partners that you have. But yeah, that's kind of neat. It's not as cool as the one from Apollo Justice, which was actually zooming in on people's tells, like which could have been as subtle as like, oh, their eyes twitching a little bit. It's like a little mini game that's like, okay, just like, again, pay attention, right? Yeah. Something I don't like too much about it is that there is a anime cutscenes and there is voice acting beyond the objection.
Oh no!
Yeah,
voice acting.
It's relatively minimal. Like, you know, it's kind of like, okay, he sounds kind of like I would expect. You know, it's not what I've filled in my head, but like, if I were to look at this character for the first time, knowing how anime as hell he was, I would be just like, okay, that doesn't surprise me one bit. But it's there and, you know, it comes in, you know, relatively infrequently, but it's enough that I'm like, oh, don't do that. like you do such a good job at storytelling through the text, you know, but, you know, so I played the first case and it's real good. Like I love those games as a, I'm going to play this right before bed kind of thing, you know, like, mm-hmm. Or, you know, in bed as I'm falling asleep, just kind of like, I'm going to read a chapter of this book. I'm going to play a chapter of this visual novel, which I have elaborated on several times before, but it, you know, it's worth stating, you know, non-pornography visual novel titles are a fucking treasure in this country because you just don't get them. And so, you know. And there's the whole aspect of, like, this isn't released in retail either. Like, you can't go to a store and buy this. You actually have to get it off of the Nintendo eShop. It's, like, $30 or something like that.
Oh, man, them's deep waters.
A little bit, yeah. Like, that's how I got Animal Crossing, because that's just how you don't want to have to put a card in to play Animal Crossing, you know. But also, this is an M-rated Phoenix Wright game, which I, you know, aside from Blood, which the previous games had.
There was some pretty murderous, villainous stuff going on in the other game.
It was pretty murderous insofar as every case revolved around a murder. Go ahead, Ben.
So I was going to say, I haven't played any of these games. Do they like show actual murdered bodies and stuff? like animated murder.
Yeah, they're
moments?
Like they're like crime scene photos, which it's okay. It, you know, it's not like, you know, Green River Killer, like he strangled him with his own intestines kind of things, but it's, you know, like it's
that's a pretty short-sighted murder if you ask me.
Just let it resolve. Once you get the intestines out, the bus kind of drives itself, okay? No, it's not especially gruesome, but like that's obviously a dead body that has had some violence inflicted upon it, and there is blood. So I haven't come across like the, you know, I haven't come across the brothel mission, you know, that would make this rated M. But there was a small measure of controversy around that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I like it. You know, it's nothing surprising. It just looks real good, and it sounds real good. The music is great.
Just not the voices.
Yeah. You know, it's you can play it. You can turn the sound off. It's like, oh, he's upset about something, and that girl is like going like, ah.
I find more and more I try to find games that are easy for me to play with the sound off.
Visual storytelling, it's so important. Yeah.
But like Faster Than Light is my top candidate for game to play with sound off. Because there's like literally nothing the sound does for you other than add a little music.
Yeah.
But yeah, so games with sound off are important.
Yeah. Or, you know, games you can play while listening to podcasts. Such as the DuckV.TV network. Am I right? Yeah, no.
Yes, you by our sponsor, me.
Yeah. Oh, man. So yeah, Phoenix Wright, if you're not familiar with the series, they just put out the HD remakes or whatever on iOS, which makes it easy to get a hold of them. I recommend them if you have patience for reading a lot of text and also, you know, solving little contradiction puzzles. You played the first one, right, Dennis?
I did, yeah. It's on my iPhone. I haven't finished it because the last place I saved... I was playing it and then I walked away from it for a little bit and then I came back to it just because it's an iPhone game and I get distracted from them. Yeah. But I came back to it far enough in that I couldn't remember really the details of what was going on, and I had saved in the middle of an investigation. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where it's like, hey, find that one out of place word of text, pay attention, right?
Yeah.
To, you know, prove that she's lying. And I have no idea what we're even talking about right now. And so I need to restart that episode, I guess, chapter. That chapter from the beginning. But that, you know.
Yeah.
That's been what does Money Smith call it? An inertia, gaming inertia. I've lost my gaming inertia. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. I've played the first half of, I believe, the second to last investigation mission from the Miles Edgeworth one, the spinoff investigations game, probably like three times because of that. Like I put it down and it's kind of like, oh man, my battery died. I lost my progress. Oh, I'm going to have to start from the beginning again.
Yeah. See you again in 3 years.
Yeah. Still haven't beaten that one. And it'd be trivially easy for me to do so.
Yeah. But that is not for lack of enjoyment. I wasn't sure what I was going to think of it because, you know, like you said, anime is hell. And I was just like, I don't know if this is really a thing that's for me, but it was a good time. So I just need to get over that inertia and get back into it.
Yeah. But, you know, I've never actually asked you this, Ben, but like, how do you feel about adventure games like that? About kind of the point and clicky dialogue driven kind of stuff?
Well, one of my favorite games from childhood is Are You Afraid of the Dark, the point-and-click adventure game.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, dude. Huh. But, yeah, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, I have nothing against them. Uh-huh. I don't seek them out, though. So. Okay.
Perfectly fair.
I know you too well to not be like, oh, I hate them.
No, like, you don't have to, like, sugarcoat it. For me.
No, I mean, I don't dislike them. They're neutral in my book.
Yeah. So
I mean,
so you know me well enough not to troll me is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you to participate. Dennis, since you put out the call, why don't you read the question?
Yeah, and I put out the call, but really it was Jeffrey Lawton who put out the question. Which is, you know, what do you think about the state of game reviews and criticism? You know, what are the best and worst cases that you've seen, and what would your ideal format be? So just thinking of all the review sites out there and the myriad of places you can really get game criticism.
Yeah.
Including here, I guess.
a little bit. No, yeah, we'll get to that because some people a little bit echo my thoughts and also kind of what I think makes what we're doing kind of neat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and read Jeffrey, you know, Gia Law's thing here. He says,
almost called him Jeffrey. Watch out.
I know, right? Thank you. Thank you for spotting that. I just said, we all keep each other honest. So Gia Law says, I think there have been some pretty big strides in video games as an art form, especially indie games, and criticism is doing its best to keep up. It seems that the idea of games not just being criticized on their level of fun is slowly seeping into some well-thought-out reviews, but the mark is still missed sometimes. One thing I think is an interesting artifact of the rapid growth and evolution of video games is that the review community is still developing vocabulary. For instance, calling everything a something-like. There are roguelikes, of course, but I've heard games described as Pikmin-like, as well as a few others. I wonder if this is going to last as a trend, or if there will be more accurate vocabulary developed. I personally like the like trend because it's insular to people who are not familiar. I'm sorry. I personally... What?
Yeah, I think he means don't like, but he says like.
Yeah, so I'll read it as he says, I personally like
he negative likes it.
Yeah, I personally like the like trend because it's insular to people not familiar with Rogue or Pikmin, and also doesn't directly describe the trait that you're actually talking about. Yeah, so he dislikes that thing. He doesn't like it. And it's a little bit older than you might think because like
objection.
Objection. No. But it just do you remember when everything was called a clone?
Yeah.
This is like it wasn't a first person shooter before we developed the vocabulary to say like, okay, this is a shooting game that takes place from the first person perspective, and not that they're using the word I over and over again, but like you're actually seeing it through the character's eyes. Thus, it is a first person shooter. Everything was a Doom clone. If there was a puzzle game where stuff dropped from the top and you had to line it up, that was a Tetris clone, obviously. You know, Puyo Puyo Pop or, you know, so whatever. It's a Tetris clone, right? And this is like saying, like, hey, this copies this thing that this other game did really well just because the thing that did it so good the first time was so recent. That's still there. Roguelike, I think, is actually a little bit more... like valid as a genre just because it does have a lot of stuff codified around it, like let's say permadeath, randomly generated levels, you know, but it's getting a little bit hazy as, you know, different stuff is, you know, riffing around it, like Rogue Legacy, which has a little bit of persistence, Binding of Isaac, mm-hmm. which lets you, you know, get new characters. Even Sir, You're Being Hunted is, you know, really, really roguelike in that it is like Rogue in a lot of ways, right? But
I think roguelike is unique in that it's become detached from the original game that it's describing. Like, I didn't even know that Rogue was a game for a good while from when I heard roguelike. So I came to understand roguelike as a kind of genre without knowing what it was referencing.
Yeah, and like for the longest time, like when I heard roguelike, I thought, oh, it has ASCII graphics. But I think Binding of Isaac was the one that really broke it out of that, right? It's kind of like roguelike meant rogue, NetHack. I about said Netscape. it was Rogue, NetHack, and a bunch of indie games that I didn't really have the attention juice to really dig into, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think it's inherently bad to use kind of a blank like way to describe, because I think a lot of the way you find good games or games that you like is saying I enjoy this, what else is out there that is like this.
Yeah.
So
Pikmin like doesn't make a lot of sense to me because like that's just a way of saying, oh, it is a simplified real-time strategy, like small squad real-time strategy.
Sure, yeah.
You know, like you can always get more granular with it. But, you know, it like to me, if I react negatively to it, it's because it is, you know, a jump and a shake away from being, oh, it's X meets Y, which is great shorthand, you know, like interpersonally. It's kind of like, oh, you know, Dark Souls. It's like Castlevania meets Ocarina of Time. okay, cool, I get it. But like, no, like, you
know, I don't get that.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, this like the that kind of shorthand, which gets at, you know, just kind of this notion of, is it criticism or is this just kind of the vocabulary or the tenor or the lexicon that we're all contributing to in describing this product, right? You know, is it talking about products or is it talking about works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think, Ben? About likes. Do you like really... likes?
Do I like likes? Hyphen likes? Hype likes?
Hype likes.
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, it's hard to, it's like, well, let's find out in 5 years what's going to happen. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't really know how to speculate on it. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how to respond to it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's fine. No, don't worry. So as penance, I know I said don't worry, but I'm going to punish you. Why don't you read the first part of Murph's response here, Ben?
So he says, social media is the best and worst thing that has happened to game journalism. It's the worst because everybody has an opinion and often it's wrong. It's the best, which it's often, wait a second. It's the best because it allows for people who actually have thoughtful, insightful opinions and know how to write. Have a platform, and the cream of this bunch can actually make a living at it.
Nope.
For my worst example, I submit all of YouTube. For best, rock paper. For the best, Rock Paper Shotgun is a daily destination because of their mix of indie, AAA, and general news. Also, they don't give a number score. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Just to kind of expand on this, I agree, and I think maybe I can offer my little opinion in this too, is I think one thing that's nice about video games, or at least in the format that we have, is I think discussion-based review does a lot more than any written journalistic review. Granted, you know, they can be better, but... The nice thing about ours is not only do we each have to do like a fourth of the work, since, you know, like we can notice different things and bring those to the table. Mm-hmm. But I think I like the discussion base because we're getting three other perspectives on the game as we're forming our own opinion on it. Yeah. And I think that, I don't know. I think that's, I don't know. I think that only makes it better. It's like the steel sharpening steel metaphor.
Well, yeah, or you know, sunlight keeps everybody honest, or, you know, we're keeping each other honest,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're accountability mm-hmm. buddies.
Where's that come from? Is that a religious thing? Like, is that when you have a friend who makes sure that you don't fornicate? Or
yeah, it's a South Park riff on a religious thing.
Okay, cool. I don't know why I asked you, hey, Dennis, is that a religious thing?
I generally know a lot about religious things, so
okay.
it's a pretty safe bet.
Okay. I just don't want to pigeonhole you. I know that you're so much more than that. Sorry. Yeah. But yeah, that's, man, the democratization and just everything falls under the, you know, the 99-1 rule, right?
Like, which is
okay. So if you break everything down into a percent, and you know, if you express it as a ratio, it's 89 to 10 to 1. But you know, like 90% of everything will not be worth paying attention to. 9% will be passable and good, and that is probably the best that any of us could hope to be. And 1% is like, this is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that can also be like applied to like, okay, 1% are creators, 9% are contributors, and just, you know, 90% are lurkers, just, you know, not contributing. But it's that breakdown just is it's a really useful rule of thumb in something approaching the purest sense of the word, which is like, not everything's going to be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, why don't you finish out his thought unless you have
yeah, sure.
your own.
I can contribute my own at the end of it. So,
yeah.
Murph continues, if I may rant in an entirely different direction, I often get yelled at for rating the majority of things 5 out of 10. The engineer in me says that most things should be rated 5 out of 10 since most things are average. However, statistically, that is a truth. Uh-huh. However, most people seem to think that a 5 means garbage and not worth experiencing. In the real world, it seems that 7 out of 10 means horrible garbage, 8 out of 10 is a flawed attempt, 9 out of 10 is average, and 9.5 is something really special, and 10 out of 10 is marketing.
Thank you, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
He actually read out R. Like yeah.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 is marketing is something that actually is a very good segue for me, because I agree that the score system is very broken, and the worst case example that I can think of was the fact that IGN gave Uncharted 3 a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and it kind of plays into my thought on it, which is games journalism grew up very differently than traditional journalism. In that, I think, you know, traditional journalism in many fields was born out of people feeling, you know, an obligation to report accurately, or feeling that, you know, they're you know, viewing it as a craft, right? And viewing it as something that, you know, they were kind of serving a higher purpose by reporting on, mm-hmm. and doing so accurately. And I mean, I know there's a history of yellow journalism and everything like that, but in general, kind of people respected what they were doing as a craft. And I want to be very clear. I'm not saying that what, you know, a lot of people who write about games professionally, I'm not saying that's not what they do, because I definitely think it is a craft. But in terms of where it originated, I think a lot more people in games journalism now just started out as kind of being fanboys, is the crude word for it, but, you know, just writing about something they were really passionate about.
Well, there's a reason that it's called the enthusiast press.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, you know, I'm sure horse journalism has, you know, horse fanboys that write about it, yeah, or whatever. So I'd have to be more immersed in kind of niche journalism fields to say if this is specific to games or not. But there seems to be just this little bit of absence of, and I'm trying to think of the right way to express it, but the reporters seem much more prone to geek out about stuff.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can think of to say it, than in other fields, or than in like, you know, movie criticism or stuff like that. There's a level of objectivity that I think is missing. And again, that's not universal. There are a lot of people who are incredibly good at what they do in the field. So take this with a huge grain of salt. Take this with a pillar of salt.
Oh no.
But, you know, I think there's I very distinctly remember with that example of Uncharted 3 getting a 10, listening to the IGN podcast for PlayStation and hearing that reviewer talk about his, first off, for months ahead of when the game was released, they had like a Naughty Dog PR rep that they knew by her first name, yeah, and would talk about her on the show regularly. And then, you know, they were getting flown out there to see stuff, and they were, and even though I think, you know, they, it's not like, hey, we're getting bribed here, but just, there is a level of hype that gets built up when you get that level of access and are legitimately that passionate about the thing that you're getting that, mm-hmm, access to, that I feel like there was huge bias there. So
yeah,
it's this weird, again, I think it's weird that games have grown up differently than maybe traditional journalism. And I think it's going to take a group of people who have grown up with games as something that you look at critically to maybe bring a little more objectivity to it.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe the way to put it is like, we're still in the phase of, oh my God, they're taking us seriously. This is a thing that we can write about. And that needs to simmer down a bit before I feel like we can get rid of that kind of bias.
Yeah. You have to wonder, like, how much of it is just because everybody who is writing about this stuff knows that there are, you know, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people waiting in line behind them. What the temptation is to just play ball. Like, maybe it's like that episode of The Twilight Zone where the little kid like had these godlike powers And if he sensed that anybody had a negative thought, he would wish them into the cornfield or turn them into a monstrosity. You know, like, just like how much of that motivates it? Like, just, you know, when somebody from Naughty Dog comes down and says, like, hey, we'll do this press junket, you know, and that's not saying there aren't outlets that value, you know, integrity. Like, I genuinely enjoy whenever a site like Joystick or Polygon says, like, hey, yep, we're not going to provide coverage on this thing because they would have required us to accept this flight to Hawaii, and we didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that gets into ethics, okay. and it's less about, like, what is a person's individual, you know, proclivities, you know, kind of, like, nudge them or encourage them towards writing.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, touchy ground to stand on. Cause again, I don't think, and I've heard people put forward the thought that, like, oh, you know, everyone's just in the game industry's back pocket and they're all getting paid for these review scores. And I don't think that's the case at all, mm-hmm. but at the same time, like, yeah, you kind of know where the power lies and you know how expendable you are, and you can't know those things and not let it have an effect on you.
Yeah. Which anybody, you know, if by some random chance you are listening from an outlet, like, our sympathies are with you because it is a hard, hard life that you live. You know, I'm only half joking.
That's why I'm proud to be mediocre at this.
Well, I mean, kind of, you know, at least not, you know, not under an umbrella, right? But God, that makes me sound like an asshole. to talk about
dig your grave.
Yeah, no. Just but yeah, like, bring a pride to be mediocre. This, but not to be as big of a target as you are, because God knows, mm-hmm. with just, you know, if there's anything that 2013 has taught us, you can't say anything without being called a name. Yeah, yep. But I think we talked about the scores thing a lot, like. Scores are dumb, especially, like, you know, just when you find out that, like, oh, developer salaries are based on Metacritic scores. Like, whoops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the critics, it's kind of like the cream rises to the top with those, because, like, you mentioned the IGN review of Uncharted 3, and it's like, I kind of thought about a Pitchfork in my head. Like, as soon as they gave Kanye West album a 10 out of 10, I was like, well, I'm not going to go to there anymore. Like, I don't know. I can't. I guess I do not have the same opinion that they do, I guess, as, you know, as far as some things go. So, I mean, I kind of treat video game reviews the same way, where it's like, you know, if they want to do that sort of thing, I think ethics is something that's valued, because people are going to listen to the news sources that they feel are, that they agree with, and they feel that are, like, honest, you know? Yeah. So,
well, there's also, you know, I think in general, video games are getting better, but the standard is staying the same, you know? So, like, I think something that was a 9 2 years ago would not be a 9 today. Not just from a, you know, graphics and computing power perspective, but from a storytelling and you know, understanding the medium perspective. But yet you're mm-hmm. still, you know, comparing it on the same scale.
I mean, would it not be a 9 today because of hype backlash? Like, just kind of like, oh, it got a 9. So therefore, or is, you know, in general, like, if I look back at something that got a 9, like, I, you know, for all of its shortcomings, I kind of like Gears of War 1, and that was rated really high. And yeah, that can kind of fluctuate by a standard deviation, you know, month to month, but, like, I will still enjoy going back and playing it.
So it's like a reverse inflation, where games that were a 9 like 3 years ago are only like a 6 today.
Maybe.
But there are those gems from history that stand out that are still a 9 even all those years later. It's just maybe the way to put it is, like, now that when Uncharted 3 got a 10, no other Naughty Dog game from here on out can get anything less than a 10. The Last of Us had to be a 10 because it was better than Uncharted 3, and Uncharted 3 got a 10. And in fact, I would be very surprised. Yeah. Man, I would be very surprised if Naughty Dog makes a game as bad as Uncharted 3 again. So as long as it's better than Uncharted 3, it needs to be a 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is an incredibly low standard.
If that was the metric, there would be a lot of 10s out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's a bummer.
But that is the metric. That's, again, it's some sort of weird scope creep type of thing.
Yeah,
if the metric is if it's better than Uncharted 3, it gets a 10, there would be a lot of 10s, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and this gets into where it gets really hairy, because it's vaguely political. And by vaguely, I mean overtly. In that,
yeah.
howsoever you rate the least of my PlayStation 3 exclusive games, you are rating the PlayStation 3, and you deserve the scorn. Like, yeah. You know, like any outlet that came out and said, you know what, maybe Uncharted 3 is like a 7.5 at best, right? It's kind of like, okay, that's,
or according to Murph scale, a 5. Like, it should have been a 5.
Yeah, which, like, I'm totally for that. Like, start everything at a 5 and just like add or remove points as you see fit, you know, because
it should just be like a 4-star scale. Just subtract 6 points from the pre-existing reviews, yeah. And there you go, you know.
And then it becomes like, okay, so tell me right now, how is a 7.5 different from a 7? Well, okay, so do you want to get more granular? How is a 76 different than a 75? You know, I just kind of feels. All right. So how is a 2.5 stars different than a 2 stars? Okay. Now we're talking. How is a buy it versus rent it? Oh, man. What's game rentals? I don't understand. You can rent games now? Yeah. Oh, that's tough.
But you fit on another way of thinking about it that's really good. Mm-hmm. Buy it, rent it, you know, or like must play, worth checking out if you like the genre, interesting but flawed.
That's what, like fans of the genre, that can go straight to hell. But I think that's what Edge Magazine did for a time, which was the you know, fuck, marry, kill kind of thing. But yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And this segues nicely into what Phil Holmes says on the Facebook here. I would hate to be a journalist in this day and age. Rate everything high and you lose credibility. Rate anything low and you end up getting pressure from advertisers and publishers. Plus, incur the wrath of rabid fans who, depending on the game, will tear you a new one for not rating their favorite game a 10 out of 10. Couple that with the slow death of the printed medium, and not only do you have to worry about that, but you also have to worry if you're going to have a job tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's also like an unspoken danger there, which is like, you know, oh, you rated Uncharted 3 a 7.5 out of 10. Clickbait. I'm not going to click that. Yeah, all I see is the score. Don't click this, guys. Don't click this link that I posted. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. The only way to win is not to play.
Good, Ben.
So, the reason why they give games like number scores is the idea is you want to be able to compare games to one another, right?
Definitely.
You want to like easily compartmentalize games and be able to, And even like I know game trailers, they'll even, you know, break it down into, you know, like gameplay versus presentation and things like that, and give number scores in that too. So I mean, I don't mind scoring systems like that.
No,
but. Yeah, I definitely prefer our method you get a better understanding of the game holistically with a discussion based method.
I think a scoring system is only so good as the kind of consensus that develops around it, which is, you know, kind of what Murph was alluding to. Like, we have agreed that anything below a 9 is not worth our attention. And, you know, not to blow up his spot because he's not here, but David has said multiple times, like, he says he can't afford to pay attention to anything that rates less than a 9.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, I have come out and said, like, yeah, give me a 6, give me a 7. You know, my time is worthless, damn it. Yeah, but it's kind of, you know, so we agree. They're, you know, so GameSpot comes out and rates, what is it, Twilight Princess an 8.8 out of 10. And, like, that is everything that GameSpot is ever known for after that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it just, you know. It's the same thing. Like, you can just look at these various ratings controversies that pop up, and it's like, oh, so they gave Chrono Cross less than a 10 out of 10? Well, I personally disagree with that. However, you know, like, it might not be a grudge worth carrying 12 years later.
Yeah, it's the 24-hour news cycle symptom applied to video games journalism.
Yeah, and let's be clear here. When we're talking about journalism, we're talking like when we say journalism, criticism, whatever. We're not talking about like the New York Times book review, like.
Yeah,
ascribing that level of sophistication to it, like maybe that is happening on some level. Like, you know, there are glimpses of that in, you know, Rock Paper Shotgun, or, you know, Gama Sutra approaches a little bit of that. But it is very much still, you know, games are reviewed like cars. That's where we're at. They're reviewed like cars and stereos as products.
I think that's still an issue with the genre too, because it's like I don't think there are enough defined auteur video game developers yet. Yeah. You know, like it's not at the same level that movies are. You know, yeah. So I think it might be indicative of that.
And like any like, you know, specific singular voices that are auteurs are called out. They're singled out as being weirdos. So specifically, like right now, I'm thinking of like Suda 51 or Hideo Kojima, mm-hmm. Neglecting like mm-hmm. Tim Schafer or like Chris Avellone, who have actually ended up being actual, you know, auteurs in their own right, putting their own personal stamp on stuff and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, why don't you read what Christopher says?
Sure. He says, I think I've started to prefer my reviews in podcast form. Because of the nature of the podcast being like a talk radio show, you start to get to know the hosts themselves and know what sort of things they like and dislike. And you can usually find someone with similar tastes and opinions that match your own. And also, given the nature of podcast, there's usually open dialogue between the show and its subscribers. It's a pretty good community of people just hanging out, talking about video games, introducing new games, etc. Much better than reading some dude's review with some number at the end. I also like to check out a bit of Let's Plays online to help decide if the game is right for me. So basically podcasts and just checking out some actual footage is really all the reviews I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And that's where I fall on it, too. I mean, I'm generally pro-podcast.
I guess I kind of have to be since I'm on one, so.
Yeah. No. It's about finding voices, right? Good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I absolutely agree with that. The clear con of that line of thinking is that you have to invest a huge amount of time listening to podcasts to get that familiarity with the people talking about it, to get that, you know, to find someone who's played the game that you know you're interested in and all that stuff. Like that's I agree that it's got a lot of strengths that that you can't find elsewhere, but you know, then there's also the huge con of you have to invest a lot of time.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, you know, it's getting to know somebody too, not just. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that's cool too is that the feedback that we've gotten, just like on the Facebook page and stuff, where games have been suggested our ways, you know, so it works both ways, mm-hmm. you know. That's kind of cool.
You know, and we exist in this happy, you know, in this very happy place, in that we have this group of people who are very passionate about contributing, and there's not an awful lot of dissent, which is not to say that it's not welcome. However, it's a very positive environment because we're not a huge target for controversy. I don't know how to say that in a way that doesn't aggrandize us in some way. So I apologize if I
guys,
come across.
We gotta start doing some clickbait.
I guess I'm sure there's somebody who really loves Uncharted who's like, God, writing a sternly worded letter as we speak. yeah, but you know, like, yes, you have to invest a certain amount of time. However, it's kind of like if you know, if Justin McElroy says like, yo, I really dig this, I kind of know I'm probably gonna dig that too, because our tastes align, and a little bit of that is like what I brought to the table starting that, and a little bit of that was like stepping out of my comfort zone a little bit every time and saying like, okay, I'm going to give this a chance. And then it grows and you find, you know, like a trusted advisor. Same thing goes for, you know, why don't we make it like 17 episodes in a row, the guys on Video Games Hot Dog, where, you know, they talk about stuff that I never would have known about before. And you know, I check it out and it's like, oh, I really dig. And all of a sudden, just by playing this, it's kind of being part of the discussion, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, contributing to that, I think that's an essential part of that feedback loop that he kind of mentions is the, you know, listeners, you know, responding back and adding their own opinions. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that I don't think we will ever reach a point where we say we have enough of. Like, that's always a good thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, please, please do not feel shy about posting stuff to our page or, you know, recommending stuff. Like, there's never a point where we will not be interested in that.
Yeah. And also, you know, hit us with the contact form, which I have one here, but Ben, it sounded like you were inhaling to speak, so.
I was going to say something, but I wasn't sure, because it was kind of contradicting Dennis's. I was going to say that, like, it's not that we accept anything, it's just the fact that the quality of comments and feedback has been so good.
Yeah.
You know, we should accept that. Like, if people started writing, like, hate-filled messages, of course, like, that wouldn't be cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, cream rises to the top. And, you know, I think that we've, you know, God, this gets into, like, individual, like, hey, guys, let's workshop our own podcast, which nothing could be more boring. I'm sorry. But, you know, just like, I feel like people know what we're going to pay attention to and not. So, you know, yes, we have a small stable. A relatively small stable of contributors, but damn it, they hit us every time and they hit it out of the park every time. So
yeah. I don't know. It's a way to go, listeners.
Yeah. You guys rule. And we have Alan writing in via the contact form to say, I tend to seek out articles rather than reviews. The point of view of a reviewer is so different from mine that it's not very useful. They play several games a month. I play a handful a year. What is novel to me is commonplace to them. So a game journalist's main value to me is in writing more abstractly about trends or the past or the future. That is where I find value in pro video game journalism. For podcasts, I listen to the Giant Bombcast because those guys review games in terms of their experience with it instead of scores, and they have a lot of self-awareness about their point of view. For written pro stuff, I lurk at IGN. Before you knock it, an IGN article comparing Dark Souls to Skyrim is what got me to buy Dark Souls. There are a few really thoughtful people over there. I don't disagree with that. I mean, you say, like, LOL, IGN.com, but it, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be the case. There's good stuff over there. You're an IGN guy, right, Dennis?
Oh, yeah, I get, like, 90% of my stuff from there.
Yeah.
But by and large, it's a great resource, partially just because it's big, and so you can count on stuff being on there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's complete as much as you can be, which is really nice. And, I mean, yeah, since they're big, they tend to attract some of the best talent. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know if there's anything I disagree with in that. I mean, yeah, articles are good. There are not enough of them. Opinion, like, actual, like, hey, this is an opinion article written by one of our staff writers that has been edited and vetted. It's not somebody's personal blog, so it's going to be a little bit less raw and real, you know, like Eddie Murphy in Raw. You know, it's kind of like, hey, like, let's do an opinion article like a grown-up person's newspaper would be. Yeah. I don't know. Do we have any kind of, like, individual thoughts on that that haven't been expressed over the course of this discussion?
I would just say that, like, this overall makes me excited because I think all of the things that we're harping on or whatever are really just symptoms of this being a young medium, which means that there is so much stuff to come, both on the, you know, our ability to criticize the medium, but mostly in the form of, hey, like, things are just going to get better from here on out. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm sure the criticism in this case will always be kind of one step behind the new innovation, but that's, you know, I can live with that. So there's I take this as an indication that there is a ton of potential rather than just being like, oh, you know, the things are broke.
How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I had never really compared our format to game reviews before, even though that's pretty much all we do. I guess I've never really like compared and contrasted that in my head. But yeah, no, I guess I have a new reference for game discussion.
Yeah, and you know that's something that we struck on pretty early, which is, you know, like what Alan said. You know, it's based on the experience rather than some kind of objective kind of thing. You know, and also diving just a little bit back into, you know, some of the earlier comments, which are you learn voices, right? And you know what I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to, you know, if you've paid attention to any, you know, let's say 5 episodes. But
Cole, what are your feelings on Dark Souls?
You know, just So yeah, that was an episode of The Level. Thank you so much, everybody who contributed. If you want to you know, throw in on any of those discussion prompts, or just you know, throw us a prompt in general, go to duckfeed.tv/contact or facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and that is where the majority of the discussion takes place. That's just by way of admin. By the time this is out, there will likely be another article on Hexcrank, which is the survival horror blog that I started up. Also, here pretty quick, I believe tomorrow, there will be a new show on the network called Check It Out, Comrade, which is Gary Butterfield and his friend, and the friend, our friend and person who is tremendously helpful, Nick Glauber. Who they're talking about indie games. It's a real short format show. I guested on an episode about Prison Architect and the Stanley Parable, and there may be more network people on there in the future. Who knows? But that'll be out there. So all of that can be found at duckfeed.tv. Plenty of content. Yeah. But other than that, iTunes ratings, reviews. Also duckfeed.tv/. Tip jar in order to buy stuff off of Amazon. You know, because Halloween is over, it is time to start buying Christmas gifts. If you're going to be buying gifts for people, do it through our affiliate link. I see what's bought, but I will not tell your loved ones. I always feel creepy about that because I check it every morning and I see, like, instead of getting a little balance readout to say, like, oh, that will cover the website hosting this month. Awesome. Or, oh, that'll cover the show hosting this month. Awesome. I also see, like, what people bought. And, yes, it's a little bit creepy, but I want you to know that, A, I do see it, so there's full disclosure and transparency there, but I don't see who buys what. So don't be too creeped out by it.
Be, like, a friendly level of creeped out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just think of it as you can troll Cole.
why are all of our fans buying ammunition? Yeah. Did
maps of Mansfield and Cincinnati.
Yes. Oh no. And the route between. So did I miss anything, you guys?
Steam group. I was playing Trine 2 with two friends from the Steam group just before we started this. So yeah. Hit that up.
Yeah, just do a search on Steam and we show up as a group. It is really simple. So cool. So by way of introductions, I am Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel, at Merkelizer.
Yeah, yeah. And David is MoneySmith777 on Twitter. And instead of thanking the listeners, who I thank every week, I would like to thank you guys for taking the time to be on this show, because it is a real good time.
Yeah.
Thanks for hosting.
Yeah. Awesome.
And editing and organizing. And I hope you guys realize what leeches me, Ben, and David are. Well,
like Dennis, you're the person who puts up the multiplayer. So when I neglect to.
I'm not doing that anymore. I've outsourced that.
Oh, man. That's a wonderful little system we have set up. Each of us is disappointing the other. Oh, have a great week, everybody.
I got some inside baseball.
Okay.
Dennis, how was Emma's birthday party on Saturday?
Oh, it was sweet. So Emma turned 13 years old Saturday?
2nd. Yeah.
Yeah. And had a Beatles-themed birthday party.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. So the menu was, we made Dr. Pepper steak and called it Sergeant Pepper's steak. Mm-hmm. We did All You Need Is Spuds, which is the potato wedges. There was blackberry lemonade, which is black blackberry lemonade. And then we literally have an aunt named Rita who is really good at making desserts. So it was Lovely Rita's cake.
Nice. No, it's not Lovely Rita's cake. She makes orange juice and it's Lovely Rita's Minute Maid.
Oh, missed opportunity. Oh, that's good. What else was there?
Not to critique your Beatles pun party jams.
No, that's good. I wish I had thought of that. There were one or two. There was like green beans from the octopus's garden, but that wasn't anything. It was just kind of a veg. Oh, strawberry field salad, which was it was a salad with oranges and strawberries and stuff in it. So mm-hmm.
Glass yeah. onion rings.
Mr. Mustard covered hamburger.
Savoy truffles? Come on, man.
Go days.
What?
You can drink way before you can drive. It's yeah. great.
They'll teach you how to do it.
Yeah, people learn their limits. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you could get, you know, some back in the USS Arby's. Some wild honey pie, piggies in a blanket, a yellow submarine sandwich.
Wow. You were not paying attention to the last part of the conversation at all.
Sorry.
That's hilarious.
Can that be post-roll? Is it okay if we mention that you're related to somebody named Emma?
No, that's fine.
I thought of some more Beatles-themed names.
Okay, go ahead.
Seriously, put these in an email to me.
I only came up with a few, but all right. Happiness is a warm bun.
I was trying to figure out what to make of that.
And with this one, you could have Here Comes the Buns as well. But Git, baby, back ribs. And Maxwell's Sizzler Hamburger. Everybody's got something, and these are the dessert options, but everybody's got something to hide except for me and my chunky monkey ice cream. Why don't we do it in the rocky road?
Nice. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Wait, so you will make Emma's day if you send me these. I'll forward them on.
Oh, okay. So it is a bunch of... It's kind of like a flight of beers, you know, like small beverages, which is just name it Day Sipper.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah. This is going to get to be like a pages long list.
Yeah. Nowhere Flan.
We need to start a catering service. I think this is money.
Sunny D King.
This is great.
Ticket to Sliders.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.